Time now for The Rest is History. This week, 56 years ago, on July the 20th, 1965, two prisoners tried to escape Mount Eden Prison in Auckland. As their plan went awry, fires were lit, guards taken hostage, and a riot broke out. This riot is included in an unofficial history of Mount Eden Prison written by Mark Darby, who joins me now. Kia ora, Mark.
Hi, Susanna.
How did the riot begin?
Well, as you said in your introduction, there were two young guys in the remand section of the prison. That is, that they had been convicted but not yet sentenced. And they were coming up for sentence, I think, within a few days of when they tried their escape. They were facing long sentences. They'd both committed serious crimes. One was a bank robber named Philip Weston, and the other was a younger guy who had done a car bombing in Auckland named John Sadaraka. And they didn't know each other before they got to prison, but in prison they plotted an escape. They managed to smuggle in a gun, a handgun, and they got hold of counterfeit keys to their cell doors. So, as you say, on the 20th or thereabouts, they managed to unlock their cell doors. They couldn't get out of the wing that their cells were in because there had been an earlier escape earlier that year by a famous prison escaper named George Wilder. And as a result, security had been tightened in the prison and they could get out of their cells, but no further. So they waited till a guard came along. This was about 2 o'clock in the morning, to check the cells. And as he unlocked the gate at the end of the row, they clobbered him. They were able to get out through the gate, and they made their way to the sort of nerve centre of the prison, a place called the Dome, the central part of it. They couldn't get any further than that either because of heightened security. You with me so far?
I'm still with you, although I'm still just mulling over in my head how they got hold of counterfeit keys. Can we have a little sidebar and I can ask that question?
We can. It was not at all hard, it seems, to get hold of some counterfeit keys to some parts of the prison. Lots of prisoners had them. Some prisoners claimed to have an entire set. What would happen is that you would be carrying a piece of clay or putty or something around with you, and if you saw a guard going past with his keys hanging out, you just press the putty against his bunch of keys, get an impression of it, and make up a false key in the prison workshops. There were workshops for various kinds of trades, and the keys were made in there. So there were lots of counterfeit keys circulating around the prison, and these two young guys in the remand section, they weren't allowed to work in the workshops, but they had contacts there, criminal contacts, and they got hold of keys that way, it seems.
Back to the escape. They clobbered the guard and they made their way out.
Well, they're still within the prison building, and remember that surrounding the prison building is a great big high stone wall, so they've got to get over that too. But they got as far as the dome, and there they got to a gate that they couldn't get past. They took two further guards hostage and ordered them to open this locked gate, but the guards couldn't because those gates could only be unlocked from the other side, from the outside. This was a further security precaution that had been put in place very recently as a result of earlier escapes. They aimed their gun at the guards to order them to unlock. They aimed through the gate to another guard on the other side and ordered him to unlock it. Bullets were fired, but they couldn't get through the gate. By this time, the prison was alerted to what was happening. Everyone knew there was an escape attempt. The sound of bullets was ricocheting around the corridors. What they did then was they made their way to the most secure basement unit of the prison where the hardest men were held. The guys serving very long sentences, 18 years, 20 years. And they hoped that these guys, who included George Wilder, who had escaped earlier in the year, might be able to help them get out of the prison. So they got there. They ordered their hostages, guards, to unlock these guys' cells. And out they came, these sleepy, hard men. And that's when things started to get really strange. The guys serving these long sentences smashed the switchboard of the prison so all the lights went out. they started to light fires, things that could burn, flammable parts of the prison, wooden floors, curtains, that kind of thing, were set on fire. And before long, the place was filled with smoke and flames. And this was obviously a terrifying experience for the other prisoners who were locked in their cells. But several of the prisoners, including George Wilder, went around with keys, and for, I gather, some hours, they systematically unlocked and released every single prisoner, pretty much, to ensure that they were not burned alive in their cells. By this time, you had pretty much the entire prison population, almost 300 guys, roaming wild through this darkened, smoky, flaming prison. They bashed their way out into the main exercise yard. So imagine a big paved area with high stone walls around it. They got out there to escape from the smoke and the flames. Now, by this time, obviously, the alarm had been sounded and the prison was surrounded by armed police, the Armed Offenders Squad, reinforced by armed troops from Papakura military camp. They stayed where they were outside the prison in order to prevent a mass breakout. They didn't attempt to go in. This was later criticized by some people who said they should have gone and they had automatic weapons, you know, they could have subdued the riot. This was the idea. I personally think it was a very sensible move that they didn't try and get in there.
How long did the riot continue for?
All that night, all the next day, all the following night, and most of the next day.
And how did it stop? Or how was it stopped?
It wasn't stopped. It petered out. The fact is, I mean, we're talking July, right? And even in Auckland, the weather was miserable. It was cold. It was rainy. And these guys were out in an open yard. They were chilled, freezing, and rather hungry. They managed to bash their way into the kitchen and get hold of food, which they cooked on an improvised barbecue, so they could feed themselves to some extent. But their routine was broken, and prisoners, especially long-serving prisoners, are used to a lot of routine in their lives, and they began to be unhappy. As well, there were a lot of short-term prisoners there. Mount Eden in those days was the country's maximum security prison, but it was also the main Auckland prison where all sorts of inmates were sent for all sorts of minor crimes. So a lot of these guys who were roaming the yard, they didn't want to be involved. They didn't want to have lots of time added to their sentence. They wanted to get back, they wanted to get back to their nice warm bed, basically. So it was possible for them to give themselves up, to go to a part of the prison where guards were waiting to take them into custody, lead them out of the main part of the prison, place them under arrest, but remove them from the riot. And successively, a lot of them did this. Some did it over the first day, quite a lot more over the second day. And by sort of midday on the second day, they were all ready to give up. They knew there was no hope for them. They couldn't get out. The prison was ringed by armed police and defense forces. So what were they going to do? So they surrendered, basically. They gave themselves up on the second day.
What happened to the prison guards who were taken hostage in the beginning?
Well, one was very badly hurt. He was badly beaten, and he suffered physical and mental injuries. But the other hostages were not harmed. And the strange thing is that there were probably dozens of warders on duty that night, uniformed, identifiable, known to the inmates, walking around, roaming the corridors while this riot was taking place. None were harmed. There was no violence that I know of perpetrated against any warders at all on that night, including the superintendent of the prison, who was an unpopular figure, but he was there and he wasn't harmed.
Were there any shots fired into the prison to control them?
Yes, I believe there were, but they were warning shots. when the prisoners were out in the exercise yard, some of them sort of improvised a grappling iron on a rope and tried to haul down the barbed wire that was on top of the walls and clamber up them. So warning shots were fired at them, and they quickly abandoned that idea.
How bad was the damage?
The damage was devastating. The prison is built of stone. It was built in the 19th century, mainly of very thick blocks of stone quarried on the site from Mount Eden itself, and so it couldn't burn. But the walls were covered with 100 years' worth of coats of paint, which burned very well. And it was roofed with kauri timber, which also burnt. It went up like a torch. So the prison was comprehensively trashed.
What happened as a result with the prisoners when they all eventually surrendered?
They were taken to a yard, or maybe several little unroofed yards, just outside the main part of the prison. These were sort of yards associated with the workshops. And they were kept there for two or three nights in the cold and the wet, with very little food, under guard, until they could be farmed out and placed in other prisons around the country. And, you know, there were a lot of them, and some of them were very dangerous prisoners. And so it took a while to find places where they could all go, but that was what happened eventually. They were sent around the country to other parts of the prison, to other prisons, that is. And one or two other institutions, such as the psychiatric hospital at Lake Alice, also took some of the prisoners for a while.
Did anything change to the way Mount Eden Prison was run after this?
Well, it had to, because it was a wreck. And in fact, there had been quite a lot of talk just before the riot that it was time to pull it down and build a proper modern prison there in its place. So some people thought, including politicians, that the riot was the final straw and now was the time to pull it down. And I think it was generally assumed that that's what would happen. But they decided it couldn't happen straight away because there just wasn't enough, there weren't enough prison beds in the whole country, really, to accommodate everybody. So what they decided to do was to patch up the least damaged wings of the prison and temporarily accommodate the lowest security prisoners in those, and that's what they did. But then they kept on patching up the other wings bit by bit until eventually the prison was back in full swing again. And it remained in use, as we know, for another 50-odd years.
Tell us how you've been able to research this and other stories in your unofficial history of Mount Eden Prison, Mark.
I call it an unofficial history because the corrections department didn't commission it or fund it. So, but nonetheless, they didn't obstruct me either, and I'm grateful to them for the help that they did give. I spent quite a while working on it. I talked to the inmates. I talked to former and current prison staff, and I also talked to other former staff, for people who worked in the prisons, psychologists and people like that. And I went through what records I could. So quite a few of them are still confidential. It's not possible to get hold of all of the records associated with Mount Eden, but those that I could access, I did.
Good talking with you tonight, Mark. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Susanna.